challenging, isn't it? And we can see a lot of ourselves in these stories. So that's the second response. First one is, he's dangerous, destroy him. Second one is, he's deranged, detain him. Here's the third one. And the third one is, again, another quite surprising one. This is the view of the people who are called the teachers of the law. Some of the versions call them the scribes. These were people who copied out the law and then made a great business out of teaching it to other people. They're called the teachers of the law. They'd come from Jerusalem specifically to investigate what was going on. And their response is, he is devilish. Denounce him. And this is the worst accusation of all. They said, he is under the control of Satan. Isn't that a shocking, shocking conclusion that they came to? And this is what Jesus says is the unpardonable sin, to kind of the sin that can never be forgiven, to come to this conclusion about Jesus that he's actually under the control of the devil. What a terrible, terrible accusation that actually is. But there's something behind this. Let's just think about this for a minute. The fact that they said this shows that they recognized that supernatural power was at work. You notice what they didn't say? They didn't say, he's a phony. Miracles are all made up. These people have got nothing wrong with them. The guy with the shriveled hand, he's just pretending. These lame people, they're not lame. Paralyzed ones, they're just pretending, lying on mats. It's all a fake. It's all a show. They never said that he's just making up these things. It's all a circus. They recognized that there was something supernatural at work, that miracles were taking place. Isn't that funny? That kind of confirms that Jesus was demonstrating miraculous power. But because they couldn't take the fact that he is the Son of God, they had only one other explanation. Supernatural power is at work. There's only one other place in the universe where there's supernatural power, and that is in the devil. So it must be the devil. And what that is saying to us is that you cannot be neutral when faced with Jesus Christ, the Son of God. There are only two options. It's either he's the Son of God or he's something that is unspeakably evil. And this is the choice that faces us. We are faced with having to take a decision. You cannot sit on the fence. You can't balance on the back of the pew and say, well, I'll make up my mind later. We are confronted with Jesus as the Son of God. We must decide, is he or is he not, on the basis of the evidence. So there are our three responses, and they're all bad ones. Destroy him because he's dangerous. Destruction. Detention because he's deranged. Denunciation because he's devilish. Well, here's the final one, and this is the one I want to say a little about, because it's the one that's quite the opposite from all the rest. It is, he is divine. Because he is divine, he's revealed to be the Son of God. The only response that is fitting on our part is discipleship. It was a great lead-in, the guy that did the promo just now for that thing. Discipleship is so important. This is the only appropriate response. And as we were going through the chapter, we read in verse 7, Jesus withdrew himself, and then a large crowd from Galilee followed him. They heard all he was doing. And then verse 10, he had healed many. Those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. So there was this whole crowd of people around him following him in a general sort of way. And then Jesus called, went up a mountainside, verse 13, and he called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. So from the large mass of people, he called out a smaller group. And then from that smaller group, he called out an even smaller group, which was the 12 apostles. So I think the group that he called to himself up the mountainside was probably the 12, plus a slightly larger group who had followed him from Galilee. And you read of some of these people in Luke chapter 8. They're mostly women, in fact. There was Mary Magdalene. There's a woman called Joanna, Salome, and other people who had followed him. So what this, I think, quite clearly reveals to us is a kind of two-stage process. There are people who sort of, in a general way, followed Jesus. I wonder if you're in that group this morning. You may be just hanging around Jesus. You're here in church and you're kind of sort of into Christianity in a sort of general way. But there is that specific call which Jesus makes, those that he calls to him. Have you ever heard that call? Have you ever heard Jesus just going beyond the, well, I'm here in church, isn't that enough, to Jesus saying, come to me. Come, follow me, be my disciple, learn from me. I will forgive your sins. I will live in you by your Spirit. I will transform you. Have you heard that specific call to discipleship? It's not just enough to hang about Jesus. Like, it's a good thing to be in church here this morning. I'm so glad that you are all here when so many people in the town are not in church. But it's not enough. Have you heard that specific call to discipleship? Jesus calling you to himself. Can we have this group that he calls to himself? And there are some of the characteristics, two in particular, of the true disciples of Jesus highlighted in this chapter.